Sure.
Well, Kira, thank you very much for joining me today. Let's begin with yourself. How did you get, what was your background in museums, and how did you get involved with the Bulkley Valley Historical Society Museum?
Well, I've always been a history buff. I think I did school project in grade 8 saying that I wanted to be an archaeologist, and you know, I got books on ancient Egypt as a kid, and was just, I think I was the only kid in my class who watched the Canada People's History series when it originally aired back in 1990, whatever that was. So it's always been an interest. And then so for school, I did an honors BA at Wilfrid Laurier University in archaeology and history. And then I went to the University of Western Ontario for my master's in public history. So it's a one-year program there with an internship. I did an internship with the Peterborough Museum and Archives, which is my hometown, is Peterborough, Ontario. And the second part of my internship was with a new facility called Sustainable Archaeology. So McMaster University and the University of Western Ontario got a very large grant from a couple different agencies many years ago, about 10 years ago now, to build two archaeological collections facilities for Ontario archaeological collections that are held by cultural resource management firms or museums or private collections, with the idea of consolidating all that material into two facilities where people could actually access it. And they were both called Sustainable Archaeology. So I started there as an intern and then ended up working there for almost 3 years. And the facility was just opening at that time. So I was there right from the day we got occupancy of the new facility, which had research labs and equipment. And the facility in London, Ontario that I was at, we had space for over 50,000 boxes of archaeological material eventually to come in. So the question of how we were going to manage those collections was sort of the thing that I started working on, you know, from the get-go with my coworker. How are we going to care for those collections? How are we going to organize them? How are we going to go, oh, you want to see that specific object? That's on this box in this shelf. It's from this site. Here's the rest of the material from that site. So we're also working on building a database that could incorporate all that information as well. So
really from the ground up.
Yes. Yeah. So I was really, really lucky. I got to see it right from the first thought of, you know, a box arrives at the facility. What do we do with it? You know, how are we going to keep track of all the other information about the site, like all the site reports, all the data? And for some of the collections too, we were talking about legacy collections. So there's been cultural resource management archaeology happening in Ontario since the 70s, government mandated. And so for some of those older collections, you know, they might be stored in brown paper bags, in Kleenex boxes with, you know, rubber bands. And it was, you know, how are we going to go through a box and, you know, put these materials into current conservation standards? So all of those policies and all that was what I was working on. Sort of some of my contracts there were starting to run out. And my now husband, then partner, he's a teacher and he wasn't getting work where he was. So we started applying in other places, and I interviewed for the Bulkley Valley Museum and got the job. And he went, okay, I guess we're moving to Smithers, BC. Where is that again? So so we packed everything up in a trailer and sight unseen moved out, and we've been here for 5 years since then.
Wow. And when you got to the museum, what was your impression of the collection? What were its early beginnings? How did it come to be what it was?
So our museum started, as many museums did, in the late 1960s, sort of like a centennial project. So our first physical location was in 1967, but there was a local fellow named Ernest Han, who was an early settler to the region, and he had, I think, been compiling some things on his own before that, and himself and some other locals got together to start a museum, and our current library building was built as a library and museum in 1967. So very sort of traditional settler pioneer type collection in the beginning especially. But interestingly, we've recently found some material that shows that right from their first meetings, they were interested in having Indigenous representation to some extent. And, you know, we're looking to have a Wet'suwet'en person on the board. I don't think that ever worked out, but, you know, incorporating some of those traditional Wet'suwet'en craft items and sort of historic items like that into the collection seems to have been an interest early on. Never really went anywhere strongly, very settler-focused collection, but grown and grown over the years. We also have an archives collection as well, so we also manage what's really the only archival collection in the community. So there's some great phone covering businesses and people and associations from both Smithers and the region in there. And we've got, I think at last count, we're getting close to where we're just over 7,000 photos, although some need to be culled, of course. But we've got this really cool collection of photos from about 1913 to 1917, all these glass negatives of early Smithers that are just phenomenal clarity and great photos. So things like that sort of, you know, and mining and forestry and sort of personal household objects form the sort of core of the collection that's come forward from the 60s and 70s to now.
And was that a gradual development of the collection, specifically the archives, all the photographs, or was that something that was, a mandate that was dictated by someone who was working at the museum at the time?
I think the museum's mandate has always been to sort of actively collect to some extent to our detriment over the years. We've taken on in the past some very large agricultural items that we're now currently in the process of having to deaccession and transfer elsewhere because we've never had the capacity to store them. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing on the horizon to safely keep those items. So I think in the initial decade or so, maybe even up into the 80s, maybe first two decades, there was a great sense of, it's old, we'll take it. And now, it's from 2015 to present, we've been doing a collections inventory and finding that a lot of the items have no provenience. We're not sure exactly why they're in the collection other than that they're old. Lots of duplication. And now we're at a point where we're so slammed for storage space that it's like one out, one in kind of situation. Yeah. So if something of interest and real value with some really interesting history comes in, it's like, okay, what are we going to get rid of to make space for this item because we're so cramped? There's quite a few items where there's no history or no real reason to have them other than they're old. So it's taken this museum a long time to realize that you can't take everything just because it's old. I think most stuff has just come through community donation. Even today we get contacted by people from, you know, fairly far afield saying, I had a relative who lived in Smithers from this time to this time. Do you want this material? I just got offered some mining documents from the 20s last week from someone who's has a great aunt and uncle lived here and owned mining claims. So it's funny that people will reach out and still today find us to offer things.
That's interesting. During the inventorying that you're doing, are there any items in the collection that surprised you? Anything's unexpected that have come up?
That's a good question. One thing that we did find was, and it was buried on this random shelf, we had tax assessment ledgers from 1923 to 1930 for the town of Smithers. Mm. And nothing exists after that until BC Assessment takes it over because they all got destroyed. So it's like those records are the only ones that still exist. And I was just using them this morning to look up some property history, and they just survived sort of by happenstance, and it was when we realized what they were, it was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I'm trying to think of what else. Nothing's popping into mind at the moment, unfortunately.
Yeah, In doing research about the history of the region and looking at the collection, are there any blind spots? Are there any areas of the collection that you're looking to build up at this point? Any communities that are underrepresented in the museum's collection?
We're definitely underrepresent anybody who's not a white Euro-Canadian settler, I would say. We've done a good job, I think, recently of trying to document and present other minority histories. So, for example, in 2017, we did an exhibit on Asian Canadians who lived in Smithers. There was a number of Chinese men who lived here early on without their families because head tax prevented them from bringing their families. Some Japanese families that lived here early on, and physical representations of them in the collections are very, very minimal. Mm-hmm. A lot of it we had to sort of dig into newspaper records and pull out little details and try and string them together into a narrative. But yeah, in terms of physical objects or physical records, very much lacking. Mm-hmm. In terms of the local Wet'suwet'en people who are, that's the territory that we are on here in Smithers, this Wet'suwet'en territory. We have some objects in the collection, not very much, just a few examples of some traditional craft like basketry, some weaving, and in terms of documentary heritage, not much either, although we're working at expanding that. We've been building some new partnerships with some Wet'suwet'en families through a book project that happened here in the last 5 years. We've been able to add more photos to the collection, and to some extent it's just building trust there, but also there is a community museum in Wet'suwet'en, which is a Wet'suwet'en community about 20 minutes from here. So, they and the Wet'suwet'en Language and Culture Society have been working at collecting and preserving materials from their community themselves. So there's not necessarily, we want to play a supportive role to that, but there's no need for us to take charge because they are the best keepers of their heritage and their culture. Mm-hmm. And we look to them for direction when we're presenting that in exhibits as well.
Mm. Are there any sort of events or individuals or changes that you're observing in the community, the sort of surrounding area that you feel eager to gather documentation about? Obviously there's COVID at the moment, but any other events that you think are that are really transformative?
We've been doing a little bit of collecting from COVID. We commissioned a photographer to do some photos of various things around town, clothes signs and windows and the things in stores. And we have a statue on Main Street of an Alpenhorn man because we have a Swiss theme here in Smithers, and somebody's very cleverly put a mask on him. So we got, a photo of that. I think that as time passes, I would like to try to collect materials related to the all the land title issues and everything that's been happening here with the Unist'ot'en and the Wet'suwet'en and Coastal GasLink. That's happening right here in our backyard. Mm-hmm. But right at this moment, it feels a little too soon. And emotions are running very high, so it's not really the right time to jump in as a museum, I don't think, and say, hey, can we have your protest poster or whatever. Like, I think I would like to see over the next couple of years if we can collect some of that material, but right now it feels a little too charged for us to jump into, but that's a conversation that our board and the staff can continue to have with community partners as well. But lately, even just trying to, we've been trying to collect from organizations that have been around sort of from the 70s and 80s, like the local ski society. We just took in some newsletters from what's called the Telco Foundation. They're an early environmental action group. And it's funny reading their newsletters that we just took in. A lot of the same issues they're talking about back then, we're still talking about today, pipelines and mining and forestry. So We've been trying to get the community to recognize that, hey, the 70s and the 80s, you may remember it, but that doesn't mean that it, you know, was just yesterday, and trying to get some of those materials collected before they get thrown out when someone moves down south or something, and actively sort of reach out to some of these organizations. Last year, we reached out to our local Saddle Club, which has been around since 1960, because it was the anniversary of our local fall fair, so we were doing material related to that. We reached out to the Saddle Club and said, hey, you guys have been around since 1960. Do you have any old records? Do you have old photos? We would love to take those in now and store them for you. So, yeah, so that's the sort of stuff we've been doing.
Are there any exhibitions that you have in mind at the moment that you're thinking about for the future? How do you go about building those exhibitions?
So in the last few years, we've done kind of two different types of exhibitions, and so either kind of just collections focused, like, you know, here's some interesting objects that kind of go together, and or we've done sort of historical, here's the history of this particular topic. So last year we did one on the 100th anniversary of our first fall fair, which was in 2019. But right now we have one up called From the Back Room, and it's literally just, here's a few dozen objects that just haven't been displayed in a long time, and we're just going to display them for themselves with a, you know, thing explaining what they are and what they were used for and why we have them, why they're of interest, and, you know, from all different regions of time and all different types of objects, you know, they're just out together in a display that just showcases them as objects. So for us, it's really it's really difficult because we have a very small exhibition space. Most of our temporary exhibits go into 400 square feet or less. Wow. So we often find that we've got way more material that we want to display than we have space to display. So we've been lucky that there's some places like our local grocery store lets us put up, it's just pictures and words, but they have a space where we can add like an addendum to an exhibit if it's like, oh, we had all this other extra stuff that we wanted to put in. There just wasn't space. So yeah, it's often, you know, many months of research and writing and picking objects and picking documentary items to be displayed, and then pulling it together and then realizing, you know what, that's not all going to fit. How are we going to make this work? So it's probably not as streamlined as it should be, but it's worked for us the last few years.
And it seems like it's drawing from the project that you're doing of inventorying the collection, you know, bringing
yes.
it out from the back and trying to just activate them and see how the community connects with them. That seems like a good strategy to.
Yes, the From the Back Room actually started as it's a newspaper column we've been running each summer since 2015, and it was exactly what you just said. You know, our summer students are cataloging objects, and you know, this is the cool thing we found this week, and they put a little article in the paper. And so some of those objects are in the display, and some of them are just ones that, you know, it's like, oh yeah, we could have featured that, so put it out. And yeah, that's exactly what it was inspired by, is just, let's showcase some of the stuff. Like, we often get that, people walk in and go, I want to, you know, where's all the stuff? We want to see more stuff. So said, here's the stuff. here's some of the neat things that, and I mean, we've been photographing all of our objects or many of our objects, so they're available online through our online database if people want to see them, because like most museums, you know, we're displaying about 1% or less of the collection, but you know, it's not, seeing a picture online isn't the same as seeing it in person. So yeah.
5 years out, 10 years out, what do you see on the horizon for the Bulkley Valley Historical Society and Museum? What would you like to achieve?
Well, I don't know if it would be possible, but a new museum has been the dream of this museum since basically for most of its 50-year history. So we started out in 1967 in a joint space, the library, but I think it was less than 5 years, we had moved out of there because the library needed more space. Mm. And we were temporarily put into the Central Park building, and we're still there today, you know, from 1974 to present, temporarily. So it's been something that this museum has at various times over its history And you know, this is fairly well documented in our records. There's been a boost of enthusiasm to try and get a new museum, and it doesn't quite work out, and then it goes away for about a decade, and then there's a boost of enthusiasm, and then it goes away. So it's something that we desperately need due to the storage issues that we have. This is a heritage building we're in, so no HVAC, no temperature control. You know, it's not at all an ideal location for a museum or an archives. We are in the process of securing some new collection storage space on the second floor of our town hall if we get the right grants lined up. And that will be the sort of most positive storage related step we've taken in 50 years. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, you know, our total museum space, including an office and a gift shop downstairs, is I think about 1,000 square feet. So, you know, our exhibit space is quite limited. So a new museum is always the goal. I would like to see it sort of be in partnership with our tourism center or with our art gallery or something, but that's the goal, hopefully. Yeah. Yeah.
And you were talking about the sort of ebbs and flows of enthusiasm. What were some of the catalysts for community excitement in the idea of a new museum?
I think just every few years you get, you know, enough new board members that it becomes a new goal again. Mm. You know, it's really tough because I think there's always, and I think too, it's always been big dreams and then trying to get support either from the municipality or whether it's accessing funding or whatever the case may be, eventually it just comes to a point and sort of seems to peter out. I think buy-in from local municipal authorities will have to be a big part of it. I think that's where it's failed in the past. Mm. And I think though now it's, I think the general sort of interest and consciousness of the roles museum plays has expanded in the general public. And I think that, you know, if we were to announce tomorrow we were closing, there'd be a big, you know, outrage at the thought of it. So, you know, hopefully too, the work we've done in the last few years to really build community connections and, you know, diversify the stories we're telling and the ways in which we're telling them, and, you know, getting our collections online so people can access the photos themselves. I think it's easier for people to see that we're not just, you know, another club that is in town that happens to do museum stuff, that this is a core sort of municipal organization. Mm-hmm. And drawing ourselves closer to the town of Smithers, who, you know, the recent last two councils have been very supportive. And I think just continuing to build on that will be important. Mm-hmm.
What's a recent arrival to the collection that you're excited about? And beyond that, what is an item from the collection that you think is a highlight that you really enjoy?
So I personally love glass bottles. I think that's the archaeologist in there. So I love them, and you know, we've got some neat old medicines and stuff in the collection that I personally just love that sort of stuff. The sort of, you know, ubiquitous objects. Recently we did receive a slide projector and glass slides that were owned by Dr. Horace Rinch. And he was the first permanent doctor in this whole region. And Rinch Memorial Hospital down in Hazleton, where he lived, is named for him. And so that was a really neat thing. We got that from one of his granddaughters. And it was because we do collect primarily Smithers, but also from the broader valley as well. And we'll take in objects that there may not be another home for in another smaller community. So we're really excited to get those. And there's some really interesting images on those slides of Gitxsan people from the Hazleton area from the early 1900s. So those were really cool to get. I was really pleased to receive those. Mm.
Well, Kira, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me. And we look forward to hearing new announcements as they come in.
Thanks. It was great to do this.